Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichard. Sitting across the table from me is my wife, Bianca Reichard. How are you doing, honey?
I am well. How are you, Daniel?
I'm doing great. We just got done watching/playing, interacting with, however you want to call it, Bandersnatch.
What was the name of that game in the 80s? It was Dragon Quest?
Dragon's Lair.
Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, that's the one.
Pam Anderson? No.
What?
Did that have Pam Anderson? What am I thinking
of? No. Are you thinking of, wait, no. I was thinking of just Cool World for a second, but that she's not in that either, and that has nothing to do with games. What are you thinking?
I don't know. But it harkens back to that area of that era of like video games that were more just like movies that you had choices in.
It was very much. I was thinking more of like the modern Telltale.
Is it like the Until Dawn of movies?
It is kind of like an Until Dawn thing with less control. Mm. Like it's not the adventure game type thing where it's, oh, connect this rope to a 8-ball and then throw down a well to advance. It's more
not what we're talking about at all.
That's what I'm saying. But in the realm of adventure games, there's that type. And then there's the like, oh, do you want to go this way or do you want to go that way? You got choice A, B, and C.
So you're saying when it comes to adventure games, there's only two types. There's the LucasArts type where you find a door and you can either eat the door, open the door, lock the door, whatever the door. Or there's Until Dawn style where it's all butterfly effect, right? Those are the two types of
action
games.
Or adventure games, no. Or, adventure games. Or you have the text-based, the Zorks of the world. Now, I speak as a man who has made his living talking about video games, but also as a man who has never understood adventure games. So it could be some level of actual knowledge and no knowledge at all.
A lot of games you can argue are adventure games, even though they're not labeled as such.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Zelda is technically an action adventure, but you know, we're talking here about I guess the thing you brought up immediately of the Dragon's Lair thing is probably the most appropriate. Hey, do you want to do this or this with these like branching paths and all this stuff? A branching path adventure game,
right?
So it is 100% both in execution and in subject matter about those type of games.
Right.
It is set in 1984. There's this game company called Tuckersoft, and there's this guy, Stefan, that is really into these type of games. And he's into this creator who went nuts and killed his wife while he was writing this book, Bandersnatch. And so he's making a game based off Bandersnatch,
right,
which the book was a choose-your-own-adventure book, and he is turning it into a game.
Right.
And I don't know, like a lot of like, it wasn't like all the media that talks about games that gets it totally wrong and just, you know, it's all Space Invader. I know I've said it a million times. It's Space Invader sound effects and stuff. Like, there are obviously people working on Bandersnatch that knew game terms and things like that. At one point, they bring up RetroArch, the emulator. It's like, okay, that's a very specific thing.
It's, and they obviously did their research about, you know, games of the era and stuff.
Yeah, totally. So I guess before we get into like our choices and stuff, we should probably, for those who did not play through it or watch it, what this is, it's on Netflix, and you get to make choices at certain points. Like letterboxing comes into play, and then it'll say, do you want to do this or do you want to do this? And there are branching paths based on your choices, numerous different endings. And we just heard about this as of this recording, you know, like a few hours before this recording.
No, I knew about it yesterday.
Well, you did.
Informed you about it.
I was doing
today.
That's right. So I learned about
I'm
it.
I'm just
earlier
trying
today.
To be transparent here, Dan.
Absolutely,
the people need to know.
I'm all about full transparency here. So we at first I was going to run down every choice we made, but really when it comes down to it, I just looked at the flowchart and some of that stuff. It does all kind of funnel you into a few different things, and like, most of them wind up being, oh, this guy created this game, and then it gets a review, and either it's really good or it's really bad, and either, like, he's in jail or someone died or something. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because the narrative of the movie, I'll call it a movie for these purposes, is all about, like, the illusion of choice and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the flowchart of how this thing all shakes out, like, it is kind of an illusion of choice in some ways because there really are only so many ways it can end.
Well, of course. I mean, they had to actually film this stuff and,
right,
you know.
But it doesn't really go wildly in different directions for the most part. There are, like, a few, like a handful of different general paths it goes down. But let's talk about some of them in general here. Like, they start out with some choices where it's like, you know, hey, what cereal do you want?
Right.
And we picked Frosties.
Because I like Frosted Flakes.
Yes. And then
they're an underrated classic.
I'm not a big fan. I've never
really?
Never been a big fan.
Oh, well.
It's not for me.
They're also one of those cereals, though, that you have to eat really quickly because they get uncomfortably soggy.
I think that's why I don't like it. And the thing is, I don't even love the taste of it. Mm-hmm. I love the taste of Fruity Pebbles, but it's not my favorite cereal because it gets so soggy so quick.
Some cereals benefit from sogginess. Have you ever had Grape Nuts? Grape Nuts, you have to let
They're too
soak.
Hard at first.
They are impossible to chew.
Yeah, it's true.
It's impossible to chew a Grape Nut.
Yeah.
Unless you let it soften. Maybe I have the palate of an elderly woman who needs all her food mashed up, or a baby bird, maybe.
No, you will break every molar in your head if you.
You gotta put a little bit of milk in it. Put a little bit of, you know, sugar or sugar substitute.
You add sugar?
A little bit, otherwise it's like fucking just bland.
I've never done that.
Put milk in it, and then a little bit of milk, and then you put in the microwave, and then it absorbs all the milk, and it becomes a little mushier, and it's a much more pleasurable experience.
I've been doing it wrong the whole time.
Well.
But apparently,
here,
if you pick the other one, if you pick Sugar Puffs, I saw this on a flowchart, but I guess your dad makes a reference to a dog in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then later on at the end, when a character is dead and buried, the dog that only shows up if you pick that cereal choice sniffs the body and like digs it up.
But we saw the dog, even though we picked the Frosties.
Yeah.
So, and then he gets caught no matter what, even
That's
if
true.
There is
like,
no dog.
We got like four or five different endings, and most of them were like him in jail. So I guess it's just different ways of getting there. It's like, oh, this guy's dead, so instead of him, this other guy shows up and
finds
the body.
Was there ever one where he wasn't in jail at the end?
Yes, the one where, so there is an ending we got, which is probably my favorite one. He kills his father at some point, chops up his body, and because his dad is out of the picture, he is at peace, and he's able to finish the game the way he wants it, and it comes out, and that's the perfect ending. That's mm-hmm. the five-star one, but then he does, I guess, eventually off-screen get arrested, mm-hmm. and that's when we're going to meet this character. The game gets remade years later, and then history repeats itself, and she starts going crazy. We're jumping. This is hard to talk about because mm-hmm. there are so many branching things. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, like, our first time through, there are some really clever things it does. Like, the second choice it gives you is, do you want to listen to the Thompson Twins or this, like, now, that's what I call music type cassette tape or whatever. And we picked the Thompson Twins. Is that song, like, hold me now, that thing.
Sing it.
And so that dictates the soundtrack of the movie as you watch it. And it does some callbacks and stuff where the guy's like, oh, what do you listen to when you code? And he said, oh, Thompson Twins. So little things like that.
Eyebrows Boy?
Eyebrows Boy, was that the designer?
That game programmer, the famous Colin, whatever.
Colin Rittman.
Harkens back to a time where video game designers were so famous that they would attach. Remember, like, Sid Meier and John Romero's Die Katana?
John Romero's going to make you his bitch. I've seen the ads. Yes. So the first time we, like, failed was you bring the game in to Tuckersoft. And you're like, hey, here's Bandersnatch. And they say, like, hey, you should come in here and we'll form a team and we'll rush this thing out the door before Christmas. And if you accept, which we did the first time, you make the game, and then it cuts kind of to 4 months later, and there's the review show, which, man, in another life, I would have loved to just be on a show like that, a show Microplay, where I just come out and I say, the graphics are good, the gameplay is good, I didn't like this, but I liked this. Well, all right, that's...
if you were around in the industry, maybe 10 years earlier, you could have been on fucking X-Play or some shit on G4.
I never had that channel, so that is a weird hole in my gaming media knowledge. I was a magazine guy.
Yeah. Well, I had magazines too, but we used to watch Tech TV, and then it became G4. And
you had the good cable package.
Well, what can I say?
You got to watch all that stuff. I always heard about it. I always heard about the Sesslers and the Webs and the Tommies. Actually, yes, Tim Turry has shown me a lot of those old Electric Playgrounds.
Oh, totally, yeah.
They are really something.
There was a show that he was on. I think it was like Cinematech or something.
Tellerico was?
Yeah, and Cliffy B was like a interviewer, VJ. I don't know what you would call a VJ kind of.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, we did that.
Say lovey.
Yes. We did that ending, and the bad ending where the game sucks. And it does a really smart thing where it kind of resets. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just quickly runs through all the stuff you've seen. And it's like set to the music mm-hmm. that you picked and everything. And so it's very smart about, like, okay, here's reminders of what got you to this point, mm-hmm. and now we're back.
I feel like if any one of these storylines were to play out linearly, it would just be maybe like a half hour, would you say? 40 minutes at
if
most?
That. And, like, because these characters are kind of paper thin, and, like, no one path is that, like, fascinating of a story. Right. It is the gimmick that makes this so
It is. And essentially, it's just an episode of Black Mirror. But it has this added element of interactivity. But, I mean, it's no more deep there's no more content there than what you would usually get out of a Black Mirror episode.
That's true. And, you know, we've seen a good amount of Black Mirror together. And, like, some of it has been really, really good. Like, mm-hmm. you know, San Junipero.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, mm-hmm. some, like, we didn't even finish that last season, I think. Like, it can be kind of ham-fisted.
I actually did independently.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And was it okay? No, it didn't.
Not that
like
great?
It, no.
That's the thing. The show can be, like, really ham-fisted. And a lot mm-hmm. of those episodes, like, 3 minutes in, you're like, oh, okay, here's, I get what this one is. This is the one where this thing where your smart lamp is the bane of existence.
Yeah, there's a famous, I don't know if it was a tweet or some comment somewhere that summarized Black Mirror by saying, what if phone, but too much?
Yes, that's basically the synopsis. But this gimmick works so well because of how novel it is. Mm-hmm. Like, it plays into the subject matter, but it also has the actual interactivity, and it plays with that in a really fun way mm-hmm. that I think makes it more than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. I really think it does some clever things here. At one point, I'll jump ahead a little bit. He starts kind of realizing, like, Stefan starts being like, oh, he's talking to his therapist. He's like, something's controlling me. It's like, I don't know who, but I don't know if it's like some cosmic force or if it's somebody, but something's controlling me. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting at his computer at some point, and he's like, just give me a sign. And we, the viewer, can choose, like, oh, it's me, Netflix, or this, like, symbol. And we pick Netflix at first. And it's this really funny thing. It's probably my favorite thing that happened the whole time we were watching this, is trying to explain through the computer what Netflix is.
Right.
It's like, this is a 21st century streaming service. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a unique thing that no other delivery method could do. The mm-hmm. fact that it's even bringing up the actual, like, trademarked service you're watching it on.
Right. That part, more than any other part, I felt like I was actually in control of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, because we were being acknowledged.
Yeah, exactly. And it was this very meta thing. Where the gimmick and the story are working together, and it does work out.
It's almost like if we were playing, I don't know, some open world, like a, let's say like a Witcher 3 or something, and like you just went on a rampage killing, I don't know, can you kill innocent people? Let's say Fable. Fable, you could kill an entire town, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, it's like if your protagonist turned around to the camera and was like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
I feel like more than anything, Metal Gear has done that stuff.
Oh, sure.
Where it's like, the more people you kill, the more bodies are in the Saros River. Or, oh, you know, Colonel Campbell's talking to you about unplugging your controller.
Well, I'm talking about the protagonist actually turning around and looking, like, at you.
Like talking to the player?
Like how it did in this movie.
Okay, I got a better Metal Gear example. Okay. Believe it or not, I'm thinking about Metal Gear. It's at the end of Metal Gear Solid 2 when the Patriots AI is going nuts mm-hmm. and it's the Colonel AI is mm-hmm. being like, don't you think you've been playing the game for a while? You should really turn it off. Mm-hmm. You know, like.
Well, they did that too with, like, was it Psycho Mantis when it read your memory card or
yeah,
whatever?
It's like, oh, I see you like Castlevania. Yeah. Yeah. Or unless you're playing Twin Snakes, then he's talking about Mario Sunshine or something. Mm-hmm. But let's start a Metal Gear podcast. Have you played Metal Gear? I'm sorry. I just woke up from something. I don't know what I've been talking about. So, yeah, it gets really winky and self-aware at the therapist's office when you're talking about Netflix. And she's like, well, this isn't – that can't be true because, like, wouldn't it be more interesting if mm-hmm. this was actually an entertainment thing? And it's like, wouldn't you want some more action? And you can say, like, yes or fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she's, like, grabbing a fucking pool cue or whatever she's got and turns into a big fight scene. Mm-hmm. Your dad comes in like, a fucking karate stance and you can choose whether to kick him in the balls or karate. That was my favorite. I think both of us liked the choice where it's just karate chop dad. It's like, all right, that's a funny way for that to go. I guess there's even a more meta thing that if you choose to leap through the window instead of fighting the therapist, there's a part where you hear an off-screen voice say cut, and then the actor who plays Stefan is getting referred to as Mike, and mm-hmm. it turns into a whole, like, film set, like, extra layer of weird meta stuff, mm-hmm. Which is pretty cool. But yeah, there's lots of, like, there's hard endings and there's soft endings, and I think there's a lot of soft endings where it's like, oh, you can either pour tea on your computer or you can destroy it. And
right.
if you destroy it, it's just like, hey, it's over. And then you can either, like, cut to the credits and accept that as your ending, or you can go back and be mm. like, okay, I'll pour tea over it, which doesn't stop the game from coming
right.
out or whatever.
It was an interesting premise. And obviously Netflix hasn't offered something like this before. And it's, you know, a very unique feature because it's the only thing on there that's interactive in this way. It's, like, pretty close to... I feel like it's the middle ground between a movie and a video game, right?
Yeah, like every time I've called it a movie during yeah. this podcast, I've almost hesitated. Like, well, I guess it's kind
really,
of a movie.
It's a unique thing. But that being said, I feel like, and I don't know if you're there with me, but I feel like after seeing like two endings or so, I was kind of like, all right, I get it.
I kind of was too. Mm-hmm. I think if we would have recorded this after our first main ending, mm-hmm. where the girl remade it, like the daughter of the game designer remade mm-hmm. it, I think I would have been way higher on it.
Right.
But it was after, I feel like once we got another jail ending and then another jail ending, and then I looked up the flowcharts and realized, like, right. oh, it kind of always ends in some manner.
Yeah, like
this
there
way.
Was no scenario in which the game would come out and he would preserve his sanity and, you know, go on to have a wife and kids and a picket fence and all that.
Yeah, it looked like there were a couple different things. Like, I was hoping there'd be a whole branch of, like, we saw one thing where they teased him going through a mirror and going through time and, like, being a child, mm. which we learned earlier his mom died in this tragic thing, and that I thought that, like, oh, he's a kid now. Is there going to be this whole other branch where you can prevent the death of right. the mother? And I looked it up, and, like, yeah, there's a couple choices you can make, but it's like, oh, you get on the train with your mom and you die in the derailed train accident. Mm-hmm. Or, like, it's not like a whole different movie if you go this way. It's right. just like, oh, here's a separate ending, which is cool that they put it in there. But yeah, I think it tries to funnel you to the point where, like, you kill your dad. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, do you bury him or do you chop him up? And then, oh, somebody comes to check on you, and it can be Colin or it can be the owner of Tucker Soft. And that winds up you going to jail any number of ways. Mm-hmm. Trying to think if there's anything else. There's the really kind of cheesy drug tripping scene where you show up at Colin's place mm-hmm. and you smoke this giant blunt and take acid. And it's mm-hmm. kind of every drug scene you've ever seen where it's like, oh, the paintings are moving. And he's talking about, like, the government controlling you and, like, this whole weird forced Pac-Man metaphor about how it's all about government control and the illusion of choice.
I was saying, like, I think we screwed up when I – because I encourage you to – do the LSD choice. Mm-hmm. But then it was like, oh, well, they probably could do a lot better on the game if they just smoked pot.
Right. They'd actually be able to somewhat focus.
They would probably super be able to get shit done.
Yeah, and that was disappointing too, because I had a note here, because you brought that up, like, oh, what would happen if you didn't take the LSD? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I was thinking, like, oh, man, there could be all these crazy things. Like, it could be a totally different story than the one we got. Mm-hmm. And I looked up the flowchart, and it's like, oh, it just that specific decision actually doesn't change anything.
Because I think, what was his name, Clint?
Colin?
Colin. Clint. Is that even a name?
I don't think they invented Clint's yet.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood, I guess, is pretty
oh,
old.
Oh, okay. That guy. But that's the only Clint. At any rate, I think Colin was going to take the acid no matter what.
That's true, which would have led to the same, like, they're standing on the balcony and right. saying, one of us is going to jump off, but we're just going to respawn in another timeline like Pac-Man or something.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of, like, they get out of a lot of things with, like, oh, I woke up, it was all a dream, or it was a nightmare, or, mm-hmm. oh, this monster showed up, but it was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they have to use a bunch of little tricks mm-hmm. just to make this gimmick work.
Right, and the whole thing about, like, oh, there being so many different timelines and realities was just a vehicle for them to show you the different options that would happen.
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
Because there is only one timeline.
What's that?
The one we're in right now, Dan. This is all we have. You, me, and this podcast table.
I agree. All roads have led us to this podcast
There's
table.
There's nothing but black outside.
Jesus, let's not get existential with
if
this.
If we open the door, we're going to fall into infinity.
All right, well... Yes,
do you ever, like, do no clip in a game and then you, like, go through the wall and then your sprite just keeps repeating?
Yeah,
infinitely?
I love
like
that. Or if you take a camera and you point it at a TV that's connected to the camera and you look at the viewfinder and it's that, like, infinite, like, mm-hmm. that thing's cool.
You know what idea really freaks me out?
What's that?
Whenever there's, like, graphical glitches in VR, that always freaks me out.
There's something especially unnerving mm-hmm. about that when something happens, because it feels like it's like fucking with your brain in a right. way that there is that layer of disconnect when you're playing on a screen. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, the game's fucking up. Mm-hmm. But, like, your brain, when it thinks you're in the space, it mm-hmm. can really fuck you up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say overall, I was really, really big on this when we got that first real ending,
right.
But fell off a little bit. But still, I think it's an incredibly clever idea. Like, I'm sure when what's this guy's name? Charlie Brooker or whatever, the guy who makes it.
Yeah.
I'm sure when he thought of it and realized that, like, well, there's no technical barriers to this. You
right.
know? Like,
all it needs is the select button on a remote.
Yeah, yeah.
I give this movie 2 out of 5 stars.
Okay, hang on. I want to go back. I want to try this again. Yeah, you know, I liked it a lot. I don't think it necessarily stuck the landing. I'll give this show 3.5 out of 5 stars.
I don't think so. Let's go back again.
Tragedy this week in the Upper East Side of New York City as podcast host Dan Reichard was found dead after plunging through infinite blackness. Charged with the murder is his fellow podcast co-host, Bianca Reichard, who will be serving life in prison.
That's not original enough. Let's go back.
Raiden, turn the game console off right now.
What did you say?
The mission is a failure. Cut the power right now.